The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Still in the public gardens. Joe spent countless hours in his garden tending to his flowers and has developed many new strains of dahlias. He was always willing to share his beautiful flowers and offer them for weddings, funerals, and church services. He has supplied many a gardener with bulbs and always let visitors cut fresh blooms from his garden. Joe will be sorely missed by his family, friends, and everyone in the community. When the first dahlia blooms this summer, I'm sure everyone will look on it with a smile and think of Joe. Perhaps he will be missed. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, congratulations to the band Always for being nominated for two CBC Music Awards, Artists of the Year and Song of the Year. Lead singer and guitarist Molly Rankin of Judick has obviously inherited some of her father, John Morris Rankin's, talent. And another Judick native, Carrie McClellan, plays keyboard for the band. The Toronto-based band have just released their debut recording, which hit number one on U.S. college radio charts.
And order, please. Time allotted for member statements has expired, sadly. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nishant Energy is a small Nova Scotia company that is accusing Efficiency Nova Scotia of using predatory practices against them, essentially stealing their customers. Mr. Speaker, this is a company that has seen their own efficiency fee, which is on the bill of all Nova Scotia ratepayers, used against them to destroy their business. And the reason, Mr. Speaker, is that Efficiency Nova Scotia is directing all the customers of their same products to three companies alone, to the exclusion of all other Nova Scotia companies. I ask the Premier, why is Efficiency Nova Scotia picking winners and losers under his watch?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member, for the question. I met with one of those business owners this past about a week ago in my constituency office, Mr. Speaker. I've directed the Department of Energy to investigate, to find out whether or not what is being described in this war is actually happening, because, quite frankly, it's if it's actually happening as it's being described, I believe it's unfair.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we have a moment of agreement here today, which is good news, of course.
Write it down.
Efficiency fee, Mr. Speaker, on our power bills under the Liberal plan amounts to $35 million plus 8% interest this year. It is being used against small Nova Scotia companies to destroy their own customer base because they cannot possibly compete with this organization when they provide pricing that's up to 90% less than what the free market provides, Mr. Speaker. The government has a duty to protect companies like Nishant Energy and many others like them. I appreciate the Premier's answer. I'd like to ask him when there'll be a resolution to this gross unfairness is outstanding.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I want to tell all members of this House, direct the Department of Energy to investigate, to determine whether or not, as it's being described in this House, is actually how it's happening. I believe it's unfair, but I also want to remind all members of this House that we removed the efficiency tax off of power bills. We've driven down, Mr. Speaker, we've frozen power rates. Mr. Speaker, we're now beginning to see some stability in the energy market across this province, Mr. Speaker, and now we're starting to see some regional cooperation to ensure that we can capitalize on all renewable energies in this sector so that we continue to drive the economy of this region.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well,
Well, Mr. Speaker, now we have a point of disagreement again, because another unfairness is that all Nova Scotians know every month when they pay their power bill that the efficiency fee is still there. It's just somewhere else. It totals $35 million. We're going to have to pay 8% interest over 8 years under the Premier's plan. No one is getting a relief on their power rates. And now we've learned that Nova Scotia companies are having this rate used against them. I'm glad they're looking into it. But I'll ask the Premier, when he gets his report back from Energy, will he bring back to this House a solution to this problem if they decide it is as it's been described in the press?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, with all due respect to the Leader of the Opposition Party, if I need those as an issue, I won't come back looking for his assistance. We'll just fix it.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, earlier today, the Minister of Community Services announced a settlement in the Huntley case where the government was suing her family for the insurance settlement from an accident that left her disabled and with high care needs. And we're all very glad to see the government end its pursuit of this family who have gone through enough, Mr. Speaker. However, the policy that led to this litigation remains in place to be used again. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is quite simple. When will the policy that resulted in this litigation be changed or eliminated so no other family has to go through what the Huntleys have gone through?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, let me say to the Huntley family, we very much appreciate the leadership they've shown to ensure that any unfairness in public policy that has affected not only their family, potentially affected other families into the future, that they've shown the courage they did to come forward to help government deal with this issue that is affecting their family today, but quite frankly could affect any one of our families into the future. We will be introducing in this House, whether it's this session or not, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm hoping it's this session, an amendment and changes to that policy so that we can take out what we believe is the unfairness of that policy.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Premier for his answer. Mr. Speaker, at the Public Accounts Committee this morning, the Deputy Minister of Community Services was asked by myself whether or not public money was involved in the settlement of this case. And at the time, the Deputy would not say whether public money formed part of the settlement or all of the settlement. So my question to the Premier is this. Did public money form part or all of the settlement, and to what extent, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question that she's providing to this House. As she knows, there's a confidentiality clause associated with this agreement with the Huntley family. I want to assure her and assure all Nova Scotians that every decision that we make, Mr. Speaker, is rooted in fairness. We respected the fact that this family has come forward. We've respected the fact they've wanted to do this in a confidential way. They do not want, Mr. Speaker, all of the information disclosed. We respect that. And on the fact, Mr. Speaker, I have heard from Nova Scotians. They wanted their government to act in a compassionate way and settle this issue, and we have settled this issue, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nobody disagrees with the settlement. What, Mr. Speaker, I'm seeking is information about public money and the use of public money. The McNeill government has described themselves as the most open, the most transparent, the most accountable government the province of Nova Scotia has ever had. Yet, Mr. Speaker, they will not disclose the details of the settlement in a case that they pursued and that they then dropped. So, Mr. Speaker, if public money was involved in the settlement with Ms. Huntley, does the Premier not believe that Nova Scotians have no right to know whether or not public money was involved? And why would not he want the public to know?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I find it rather ironic that the interim leader of the New Democratic Party, a member of the former government that was the most secretive government in our history, Mr. Speaker, is standing up lecturing members of this House about openness and transparency, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as bad as that is, Mr. Speaker, she's now using the Huntley family on this floor for cheap political tricks, Mr. Speaker. Respect that family, Mr. Speaker, and allow us to move forward. Correct a piece of public policy that was left unchanged under that government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, at the Halifax Chamber of Commerce lunch last week, the Minister of Finance leveled some pretty heavy criticism about the successful film tax credit program. Mr. Speaker, among other things, the Minister of Finance said, and I quote and will table, that 99% of the money paid out in the film tax credit goes to companies that don't pay tax in Nova Scotia. Well, that's simply not accurate, Mr. Speaker. This has caused great concern to the many Nova Scotians who work in the film and in the film business here in our province. I'd like to ask the Premier, does he recognize the benefit that the film tax credit brings to the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we have very much appreciate the investment that businesses are making across this province. We need to continue, though, as a government to ensure that public policy reflects the financial realities of this province and that when the tax credits that are being provided for economic development in this province actually are having the results that Nova Scotians expect to have. I've heard time and time again, Mr. Speaker, from members across the hall, how they want government to change, how they want things to change, yet they stand up and look and they promote the status quo, Mr. Speaker. The status quo is going to give us the economic results we've had, which is the worst performing economy in Canada. Times are changing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure there was an answer there, but I can tell you this, Mr. Speaker, if the Premier wants to know about the film tax credit, the facts are that $24 million was paid on the tax credit last year, but the government got a return of $122 million in exchange. So, Mr. Speaker, we want to see lots of changes, but when a program works, it deserves to be defended. And I'll tell you something, Mr. Speaker, at this time when all of the summer production work is being booked, the words of the Minister of Finance and now the Premier that question this actually make it harder for them to do their jobs and bring new investment in our province, one of the goals of the Ivanhoe Report. It is harder today than it was a week ago because of what the Premier and the Minister of Finance have said. So let's try, Mr. Speaker, and actually answer the question. They ruled out other tax credit changes. They have a chance today on the film tax credit and the $122 million in business that goes with it. Will the Premier assure the film business that tax credit in some form will remain in place by this time next week?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Spence, what I will encourage the Leader of the Conservative Party to do is to check his math, Mr. Speaker, because he's wrong.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. Today we learned that the government had reached an agreement with the family of Joellen Huntley, and I'm pleased about that. Last October, I urged the Minister of Community Services to settle with the family out of court. On that day, the Minister defended the province's court action by saying, against the family, saying the cost of care is recouped when there is ability to pay, and that is why insurance is purchased in this province, and that is why people are able to contribute to the cost of care. I'll table those comments, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, will the Minister explain what changed between October 9th and today that led her to work collaboratively with the Joellen's family rather than taking them to court?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very pleased today that a resolution has come for this family who really have suffered over the years. Three successive governments have dealt with this policy within the Department of Community Services. And I think that this case really highlighted the fact that it didn't meet the needs of everyone. So on December 6th, I directed senior policy advisors within the department to please review it. I'm pleased to say that last week that review is complete. I will be getting recommendations within the next couple of weeks, and I'll be happy to announce those when those happen. The settlement still involves the province. It also still involves the family through a negotiated settlement. So I'm at the end of the day, what's important is that Joellen is still getting the care that she deserves, and the family can concentrate on her needs instead of litigation.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I would like to thank the minister for that answer, Mr. Speaker, and agree with her that the most important thing is that the family can get on with their lives, and I'm thankful that for the settlement to have occurred. My question for the minister is this. Will the minister amend the necessary legislation and policies to make sure that no other family has to go through the same battle that Joe Ellen's family did?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Absolutely. And as legislators, we have a responsibility to ensure when there is policies that are existing currently, if they don't make sense, if they are not in the best interest of families and create undue hardship, that we have absolute ability and responsibility to make sure that those policy changes happen. As I stated, the review was just completed as recent as last week. I will be introducing policy changes to that so no other family ever has to go through this again.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, hospital patients with life-threatening conditions require constant monitoring while in intensive care units, where the standards of care are to have one nurse look after one patient. However, increasingly, nurses with both the specialized training and experience are being asked to tend more than one patient at a time in these units, putting patient care at risk and placing additional stress on the nurse. So my question for the Premier is this. Why does the Premier and his government think it's okay to ignore the existing standards of safe patient care in critical care units?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't believe any member of this House would suggest that it's okay to ignore any policies that are placed for the safety and protection of patients. Mr. Speaker, if the leader of the New Democratic Party has concerns, she should take it to the employer.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, we know the government is ignoring the standards because nurses have been telling us this for nearly a year. Yesterday, a nurse, Tracy Livesay, a critical care nurse at the Halifax Infirmary, said that their working conditions had forced a record number of experienced nurses to retire early, leaving hospital units dangerously understaffed. And she says nurses regularly work short-staffed at a risk to patient safety. So my question to the Premier is this. Why won't the Premier look even at considering protecting patient safety by listening to the nurses' recommendations?
The Honourable Premier.
We have continued, since given the good privilege of being the government of this province, to listen to healthcare workers across this province. I've listened to the leader of the New Democratic Party stand up in this House talking about nurse-patient ratios, talking about healthcare providers. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, in the last full-time a year of that NDP government, Mr. Speaker, we saw an exodus of nurses, Mr. Speaker. It was the lowest number in our province since 2008, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, and let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, what we've seen, Mr. Speaker, in the last year, those are not our numbers, Mr. Speaker. They're from the College of Nurses, Mr. Speaker. So what are they accusing the nurses of, not being truthful, Mr. Speaker? I can't imagine they would be doing so, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, there are more RNs working in this province today than ever in our history, Mr. Speaker. And to add to that, Mr. Speaker, there are more licensed practical nurses working in our province today than ever in our history, Mr. Speaker. Let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. Under their watch, nurses were leaving this province. Under our watch, we're seeing the numbers go up.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for you this afternoon will be to the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, last fall the Minister came to Windsor to meet with a group of stakeholders in relation to the Lake Pisiquid and the water levels associated with that and the gates of which his department is responsible for the operation of. I wonder, there were some action items discussed at that meeting, and I wonder if the Minister could update me today on what those action items in progress would be.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the member across the floor for inviting me to the area to discuss this with the Canoe Club and with other stakeholders in the area. There was definitely some serious concerns that were raised at that meeting. And among those concerns, we've been working diligently to get those in place. And we will have a full report on that very shortly. And our staff has been very concerned, and I believe they have a very open dialogue now with all the stakeholders in that area. And we look forward to enhancing that as we move forward.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that answer. And I think I heard him say shortly we would have something. I wonder with the lake hopefully soon to be open and users upon it. Could he be a bit more specific on time frame if he's able, please?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Well, the dialogue is continuing with the organizations as we speak, and we can't implement some of these new settings such as the alarm system and the signs and stuff that we hear back from the Canoe Club in particular to make sure there's no safety hazard in the future with their members as they're out paddling and this summer. So that should be completed before the summer season starts this year for the club.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of ERDT. Mr. Speaker, today we learned that the government handed out another $2 million to Novastar in the 2015 season. Yesterday in question period, the Minister said, quote, all details regarding the Yarmouth Ferry have been posted online. However, there is only one line that says March 2015, $2 million dispersed. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, does he believe that a one-line sentence is actually providing details and being accountable to Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's my understanding that the company is going to be providing today the exact breakdown of that $2 million.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister if he would provide an immediate update on how much has been spent on goods and services purchased in Nova Scotia. He failed to do so, saying that all details would be provided online. Liberals have now handed out $4 million of the $13 million promised for the season, and the boat hasn't even returned from South Carolina yet. Nova Scotians deserve an opportunity to see for themselves if their hard-earned tax dollars are being spent competently and if those dollars are being spent here at home. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is this. Will the Minister today provide a detailed account of where and how much the $2 million was spent in the month of March?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, we had the opportunity, along with my colleague from Yarmouth, to announce earlier this year that the Novastar would be sailing again with a $13 million investment from the people of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, at that announcement, we were joined by many municipal leaders, business owners, tourism representatives that were there to celebrate the fact that we've once again maintained our commitment to restore the ferry service between Nova Scotia and the United States, which is such an important market for us to be able to grow our tourism industry. Mr. Speaker, during those remarks, I pointed out that there are some in this province that want to see this ferry service fail. Mr. Speaker, if there's anyone that has any doubts who I was referring to, I think the last question makes it abundantly clear.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nurses in our province are overworked, overtired, and fed up with being understaffed, Mr. Speaker. Just to put it in perspective, this past year, the province paid over $17.5 million in overtime to nurses, which works out to about 250 full-time nursing positions. But, Mr. Speaker, we know that that's not the only cost associated with the current nursing shortage. Travel nurses have been hired from out of the province to staff critical care areas at the QE2. So my question for the Minister of Health, on top of the overtime, how much was spent last year by the province on additional nurse staffing?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the Minister opposite is that, the Member opposite, is that we are at a point in time where we have the most nurses currently registered in the province. We have the most graduating, and what I can tell the member opposite is that we won't be taking a $500,000 out of the nursing strategy as they did under their watch.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Well, interesting, Mr. Speaker. We have more nurses maybe today because we expanded the nursing program, Mr. Speaker, and that's cold comfort cold comfort for the patients who are not being treated in the ICU beds that are closed, Mr. Speaker. That's not the answer to the issue that's in front of us, Mr. Speaker. When I asked about the current nursing shortage yesterday in question period, the minister said he didn't think things were all that bad. But, Mr. Speaker, I disagree. When ICU beds at the QE2 are closed because of a lack of qualified nurses, things are bad. So, Mr. Speaker, to help the minister better appreciate the severity of the situation, can he please provide all contracts associated with the hiring of travel nurses to this House?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. During budget time, I'm sure the member will drill down on some of those statistics, and I will be more than pleased to provide the member with as much information as he desires.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will not be asking a question about the Novastar. Mr. Speaker, aquaculture has the potential to be a very good, significant industry in Nova Scotia, creating many good jobs. And Nova Scotia is well positioned to take advantage of that potential. We have an enviable ocean real estate, an excellent university aquaculture at Dalhousie University campus. With David Gray last night saying nearly every grad gets a job in BC. In December, the government accepted the Dole Leahy Panel Independent Aquaculture Review for Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, months have been wasted by the Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture sitting on this report while the industry needs clear regulations and guidelines to move forward, to grow and to create jobs. So my question to the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture, when can we expect new aquaculture legislation and regulations here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's interesting to hear the question. It's a very important question to the Nova Scotia economy. And indeed, we have not been sitting on this report since we received it. We've been diligently working on a new act and a new set of regulations that will move the industry towards more accountability, aligned very closely with the report from the Dole Leahy.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
And see, Mr. Speaker, the biggest problem with this is that the review, the Dole Leahy review, said that no new aquaculture licenses should be issued until the new regulations are in place. As a result, the industry that could be growing jobs in rural Nova Scotia is in limbo, frozen until the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture makes a decision or makes his move. So my question, what's preventing the minister from giving a green light to an industry that has such a large potential to make an important contribution to sustainable prosperity in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, this is very important to Nova Scotia's economy, as the Honourable Member has mentioned. We are very diligently looking at this. In the past, the Department of Fisheries has had a very poor record of not being accountable to the public, to the industry. And indeed, we're going to change how we do business totally. And indeed, we will be following the Dole Leahy report. However, it's taken a substantial amount of time to draft those regulations and the new bill that will be coming forward. We're hoping to have it introduced in this session of the legislature, and with the consent of the other parties, have it passed this session.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, outside this chamber, the Minister of Health and Wellness told reporters that there aren't issues facing nurses outside of Halifax, at least according to him. He said, "I do not hear when I go into Cape Breton Regional, Yarmouth Regional, around the province, some of the same issues, Mr. Speaker." And I could table that for the Minister's wishes. Mr. Speaker, if nurses across the province are telling us there are staffing shortages, enormous overtime hours being worked, and a lack of respect from the government, who is the minister talking to when he visits these hospitals?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And over the last year and a half, I've now met probably with a couple of hundred nurses at different tables and different settings. What I stated yesterday, in fact, is reflective of the majority of communities where there are regional hospitals or smaller community hospitals. We know from time to time that there are specific areas. how many ERs closed because of a nursing shortage. I mean, that is that, in fact, as the member knows from Shelburne, that's in fact one of those rare areas across Nova Scotia. And we hope that some of the 25 nurses who will be graduating from the satellite program in Yarmouth, in fact, will find themselves going to Shelburne to work.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I had the honour to attend with the member down at the meeting, and the member from Argyll, Barrington, I believe, Argyll, to hear the concerns from the residents down there. And there is a nursing shortage outside of HRM, Mr. Speaker. In addition to the minister's comments, he added, I wouldn't say we have a provincial problem in terms of nursing, end quote, yet in question period, Mr. Speaker, yesterday he stated we do have a high number of retirements and we can expect that for at least about 10 years. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm a little concerned about the minister's conflicting comments. Maybe the minister can enlighten us all and tell us, do we have a problem in terms of nursing or do we not have a problem in terms of nursing? Which is it?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I would suggest that the member opposite get an updated list of the number of nurses in the province, because we are at a record number for both nurses and LPNs in the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Fisheries. Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering about the lobster levy. We were hearing about a 2-cent levy, and then we were hearing about a 5-cent levy in a mystery zone, and then we haven't heard anything. So fishermen in northern Nova Scotia are getting ready to set their traps over the next couple of weeks, and they're wondering about the status of the levy. So my question today for the minister is, will we see a lobster levy in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are indeed working on a process in the lobster industry to collect a fee. We're going to call it a fee instead of a levy, because we may come up with an alternate way to collect that fee. And indeed, we hope to have a legislation before the House this session.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be interested to see how that plays out, because to most of us, it certainly looks like this is going nowhere. And while we're going nowhere, Maine is getting on with it. Maine's shipments of cold water lobster to Asia are well ahead of ours. Maine is clawing away at new business while we're chasing our tails. And it seems like we're falling into a trap here in Nova Scotia. So my question for the minister.
Order, please.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East has the floor.
Thank you very much. I don't want to fall into the trap of all the chatter in the room here. But my question for the minister is just that he confirm that he'll take some action with his fee during this session of the House.
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, and I want to correct the Honourable Member. Indeed, we are doing very well in Europe. Actually, in a marketing campaign we did recently, we sold 80,000 lobsters worth $2.2 million in 24 hours in China.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Health. In February, the government made changes to policies around the provision of long-term care. They removed the deferral policy, Mr. Speaker, that encourages more seniors to be reassessed and receive care at home. The department says the purpose is to minimize the wait list for nursing home care. However, recent figures released by the Chronicle Herald, and I will table that, I think I got the table there, says the wait list for home care services has grown to 883. This appears to be a sleight of hand, a situation where we're robbing Peter to pay Paul to give the appearance of shorter wait lists. So my question to the minister, how does the minister feel that pushing people off of one too long long-term care list onto the mile-long home care list will result in improved care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And one of the areas that the former minister knows that we have to address in the province is indeed getting a real accurate list of Nova Scotians who need to be in a nursing home. And you know, when the department called last year, 33% of those were not ready to go into a nursing home. And so now we will get, hopefully, that accurate list that will be reflecting high needs and the risk of our seniors. And so that's going to improve in that area. We also know that many of those that are requiring home support, it's a distribution across the province. And again, we're working to make sure that we respond to those who have the highest needs. Many people, knowing that there is a list, get themselves on a list early.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, a 2011 report commissioned by the government said that 36% of people on wait lists for long-term care were in communities where no public-funded home care services are even available. The government failed to include that in its policy change announcement. What solutions would be provided to approximately 900 people who are waiting for placement in an area with no home care at all? So how does the minister plan to address such a large gap in services, and when can Nova Scotians expect the results?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I believe that one of the areas that will, in fact, improve the delivery of home support is through the RFP that will be going out in early fall. We have a huge gap in the price point per hour of home care. We will be able to afford more home care, more support workers when we do get a system that gives us, in fact, a better price point for every hour of service. We now have a gap of $15, $20 from one part of the province to another, and this is going to give us more money to address this problem.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday in question period, I asked the Minister of Finance about changes she has planned for the film tax credit. The minister was unable to give any details. However, last night, representatives of Nova Scotia's film industry told me that at a meeting with the minister last week, they felt left cold that the film tax credit upon which their industry depends is under her budget acts. If this proves true, it would be in complete disregard of the Ivany Report recommendation by cutting short Nova Scotia's exciting, growing, creative economy. My question for the minister is, what information has the finance minister given to screen Nova Scotia that she's unwilling to give to the House of Assembly?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member opposite. Mr. Speaker, the members of Screen Nova Scotia had come to see me, and we had a good meeting on Monday. There were members of my staff there as well, and we discussed the concerns of the industry and had some good dialogue. I think they've also met with other members of the legislature, and I'm sure that they would tell you that we had a frank and open discussion. I am unable to give information about the budget until April 9th, and that remains the case, but we are certainly willing to talk, and we have set up a meeting, or in the process of setting up a meeting, for post-budget, so that dialogue will continue.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When the film tax credit was first introduced in 1993, the industry was worth $6 million. This past year, it's estimated to be worth $150 million, Mr. Speaker, and it provides over 2,000 jobs right around the province, including $9 million that was spent recently on the internationally acclaimed miniseries, The Book of Negroes. So my question for the minister is, what kind of province is her government hoping to create? Because it seems ready to set us on a path to becoming a creative wasteland and cultural backwater if it does anything to affect this tax credit.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, one of the jobs that we have in government, and certainly as a finance minister, my job is to look at the programs that we provide. And everybody in Nova Scotia knows that we were doing a program review, that it's our job to look for the best value for Nova Scotia dollars, the tax dollars that we are entrusted with to buy the services that are essential in the province. So I understand that many sectors are feeling some anxiety. It's pre-budget time. They don't know what's coming. But, Mr. Speaker, we value the businesses that operate in this province, and we're doing our utmost to help everybody.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, previously in this House I raised the issue of extremely low prices of cabbage, as low as $3 a bag. Farmers like Art Wolliver of Basin View Farms believe the situation is caused by enhanced farm subsidies in Quebec and Ontario. In fact, though I raise the issue in relationship to cabbage, it is a factor in the low price of many of our fruits and vegetables in our growing season. The minister promised that he would investigate the issue. Can the minister confirm that he is addressing the situation and that, in fact, the farmers are correct that Quebec and Ontario have enhanced farm subsidy programs?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, we are investigating this. We are working with the Horticulture of Nova Scotia and Perennia to see if we can resolve this problem. Unfortunately, Quebec and Ontario do subsidize these crops, which we don't have the ability to do, and it's not the way to grow our industry profitably. We are looking at ways to enhance the production of those crops and indeed make them profitable in Nova Scotia, even against competition that is unfairly put forward by Quebec and Ontario.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the Minister for that, and I was aware that the Minister was investigating this situation. I appreciate that. While we all realize that Quebec and Ontario may have deeper pockets, it's unlikely that we're going to get them to change their policies. Will the Minister tell this House how he plans to help Nova Scotia farmers deal with these inequalities caused by this situation?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as I've already said earlier in the first reply to your response, we have to get more productive in our fields. We have to make sure our crops are doing just that. I'll give you an example. We have a producer in the valley that produces kale. First time it's been ever grown in Nova Scotia, period. It was grown in North Carolina and in the Carolinas, and they get serious weather conditions, too hot to grow it now. And our production in kale in this province is four times greater than was ever achieved in the Carolinas. So Nova Scotia is moving forward with technology, and the ability to do this is no reason we can't apply those principles to the cabbage and other products such as cabbage.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education and Childhood Development. Over the past 5 years, students in rural Nova Scotia have missed 40 to 55 days of learning because of cancelled school days due to weather. Educational consultant Paul Bennett has said, no school system anywhere can be competitive when students are only in school for 165 to 175 of the 180 to 182 instructional days. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Much of the same weather challenges exist in the United States, and they have found great success in the area of e-learning or blizzard bags as a way to combat the lost days, Mr. Speaker. A question to the Minister. Has the Minister considered adding e-learning or blizzard bags as an option?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the member opposite for the question. And as we all know, there have been a number of days where students have lost instructional days in their school year due to something that none of us can control, and that is the weather. But we have gone out to school boards and asked if they could look at ways within this current school year that they may be able to recover some of those lost instructional days. The whole issue of e-learning presents a challenge. It's certainly something that we're looking at, but we need to make sure that every child in this province is able to take advantage of any solution that we put in, and we know that e-learning does have its limitations with some students.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, while children have missed a number of school days this year due to storms, they've also missed a number of days due to safety concerns with school infrastructure. This morning it was reported that a child at Kingswood Elementary was trapped between the school and a wall of snow, and the paramedics had to be called. I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. When children are at school, parents need the assurance that their child is safe. Question to the Minister. What is the Minister going to do to guarantee schools are safe for children to attend?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, let me say I do want to thank those people at the school who took quick action to make sure that that little child was safe, calling in those... putting in the call to the fire department and the paramedics to come and ensure that child's safety. And I do want to say that every worker in our school system has the safety of the students as their priority, and that's an example of them putting that to work.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister of TIR. Mr. Speaker, for the residents of Little and Big Tangkwoke Islands, ferry travel is part of their daily lives. Whether commuting to work, school, or medical appointments, the only mode of transportation to the mainland is the ferry. Now, thanks to the McNeill government, this daily cost will be significantly more expensive, in particular for low-income residents who can't afford to buy an annual pass. The minister, and I thank him for this, has visited the island with me in the past, so he is aware of how isolated the island and the communities are. So my question to the minister is, why is the minister allowing this enormous increase, which only serves to further isolate these rural communities?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I certainly thank the member opposite for the question. And with respect to the Tangkwoke Islands and all the ferries in our fleet, look, there was a tough decision that we had to make with respect to the fees. The reality is that Nova Scotians, all Nova Scotians, including those who use the service, they subsidize the ferry services to the impact of $9 million, collecting about $1 million in revenue, and we really had to close the gap on the expense versus the cost for those services. Without question, the people of Tangkwoke, we will maintain the fact that the annual rate for those residents will remain intact. There'll be some slight adjustments to the other levels for the services and for those fees. But at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, we understand the importance of that service. We're going to continue to maintain all of those services for the people of Nova Scotia and for the people of Tangkwoke. We're going to keep those ferries. We're going to do what we can for those who are impacted with respect to their income and look at what the annual rates will be and certainly work with the community, work with the member and all members that are in affected communities to see what we can do about controlling those rates on the annual basis. So it was a tough decision, Mr. Speaker, but it's the right decision. We're going to make sure that we have costs aligned with the expenses and with the revenue that we have. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This might put it in perspective for the minister better, and I know he does care, so I think that he will take this into account. Because today, Mr. Speaker, a book of 10 tickets to board the Tangkwoke Island Ferry will cost you 60% more than it cost yesterday. If a resident takes the ferry 5 days a week to work and back, or if a child's going to school, that individual will be spending an extra $636 a year. So a family of four now, it will cost over $2,400 to just get their groceries, participate in work and school. And I'm sure the minister can understand what a huge increase that is. So given the reduced capacity and the often unreliable service of the Tangkwoke Ferry, how can the Minister of Transportation possibly justify this type of increase?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And for the people of Tangkwoke, the reality is that it is an essential service. We all understand that. But when you look at the 10 passes, as the member's referring to, for one trip across, it's $5.50. You can get an annual 10 pass for $13.50. So, Mr. Speaker, if you look at those numbers, Well, the people of Nova Scotia are subsidizing, including those who use the ferry, are subsidizing 8 of every 10 trips that people make across this ferry service. So that, those numbers don't align. We're asked by Nova Scotians, by the opposition, by everyone in this province to be fiscally responsible to make good decisions. With this particular case, we're keeping the annual pass where it is for the people of Tancook. So those who use annual passes will continue to do so, and we'll make every effort to make a payment plan so that those people who use the annual pass will be supported by way of a monthly payment or something that we can do to make it more manageable, Mr. Speaker. We're making good decisions. All of these choices are tough, but this is the right one for the people of Nova Scotia. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this morning, Nova Scotians woke up hoping that the user fees raised by this government was a cruel joke. Well, Mr. Speaker, they were half right. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is going to be for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. Trucking companies are trying to make a living like every other hardworking Nova Scotia. Truckers are on the road 7 days a week hauling freight from one end of North America to the other and around our communities. Their licensing fees, Mr. Speaker, were jacked up 3% effective today. So a trucker hauling more than 6,000 kilograms will now pay $4,012.15 annually for a licensing fee. My question to the minister is the minister aware how many increases in licensings of truckers have faced in recent years?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, over time, there's been increases to service fees. And in this case, the fees are no different this year than they've been in any other government where fees have been increased. In order to continue to provide the services that Nova Scotians have come to expect, we have to close the margin on costs and revenues. And in these circumstances, Mr. Speaker, we believe that the 3% is a reasonable approach to take in addressing the needs that Nova Scotians have come to expect.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg, on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the Minister's information and the information of all members of the House, trucking license fees have increased 15.8% in slightly less than 7 years. In recent years, they have been seen 5 increases, ranging from 2% to nearly 6%. It would be interesting to know how much the Minister thinks is enough to provide this licensing services. Government talks about user fees being imposed to cover costs, but surely it can't cost this amount of money to print off a trucking license. The government needs to provide truckers some relief instead of surprising these small independent business people every year with increased costs. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is, how much does it really cost to provide this license, and can the minister really justify yet another fee increase?
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. A good question.
Just before everybody
takes off and we move on to our next item of business, I have a couple of housekeeping items here. The second question lobbed in question period today from the Honourable Member for Halifax Needham to the Premier saw the Premier provide a quote referencing a cheap political tactic. So I want to draw attention that that is an unparliamentary term as ruled by the Speaker in 1960 in this legislature. So I would ask the Premier to retract that phrasing.
Certainly, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Certainly, Mr. Speaker. I missed that ruling in 1960. So I will withdraw those remarks, Mr. Speaker.
Kudos to our chief clerk for diving into the history books for that. The second...